What is sound? It is a very natural question to ask, since we make such great use of sound and of the capacity of our ears to detect it. If we try to consider it in a broad way, we shall find that what we call sound, considering the circumstances of our existence, provides the most natural, direct, and efficient way of communicating with each other. All round us are material objects of many kinds, and it is quite difficult to move without shaking some of them, more or less. If we walk about on the floor, it quivers a little under the fall of our feet. If we put down a cup on the table, we cannot avoid giving a small vibration to the table and the cup. If an animal walks in the forest, it must often shake the leaves or the twigs or the grass, and unless it walks softly with padded feet, it shakes the ground. The motions may be very minute, far too small to see, but they are there nevertheless. Besides the obvious surroundings of material things, there is an ocean of air in which we live. We cannot move without stirring it. And moreover, whenever we make anything else move, as when we shake the ground or the branches or the table or whatever it may be, the air is shaken too because it touches all these objects and moves when they move. It is very easy to set the air quivering, and when once a quiver is started, it runs through the air in all directions till it has spread and weakened and died away. Also, it is a very curious thing that the air can carry ever so many quivers at the same time, going in many different directions and of many varieties. But each travels as if there were no other there. We will presently consider an experimental illustration of this fact. Now, since nothing can be done without starting shakes and quivers in solids or in liquids or in air, in some or all of them, and since it is very important to everyone to know what is happening round about him, so far as it is possible to do so, it is not surprising to find that we human beings and most animals possess organs especially fitted to detect these shakes and quivers, and we make great use of them. The ear is marvelously sensitive to the minute quiverings that come to it through the air, and then pass down the tube of the ear and come finally to the delicate organs within. We say that we hear a sound, which means that somewhere or other an air quiver has been started and has reached our ears. As the life and processes of the world go on, the actions which take place are accompanied by these tremors, and we live in this world of sound. We can interpret what we hear because all the tremors are different and we've learnt to know them all. We can tell the sort of tremor that is made by the rustle of the leaves from the sort that is made by thunder or the call of an animal. In fact, it seems quite absurd to think that there's anything wonderful in it because the sounds seem so different. But, of course, that is just where the wonder lies. Only air tremors in every case, and yet the ear has such marvelous powers that it can sort them all out from each other, can tell one person's voice from another, can tell one word from another, can even tell by the minutely differing shades of inflection the spirit that lies behind the word. The more one thinks about it, the more wonderful one finds it to be. No doubt the reason why ears can be and are so finely trained is because the information they give is so important and so interesting. Sometimes it is a matter of life or death, as in the case of the animal who hunts or of the animal that is hunted. It is everything to us to be able to talk to our friends or to use our voices and to set in motion air quiverings that have special meanings to those that hear them. If we walked in the country, how much we should miss If we could not hear the birds, or the wind, or the brook, or the passers-by, think what it would mean to us if we could have no singing and no music. The quiverings of the air, and our ears that hear them, link us closely to the world about us and to our fellow creatures. We can readily find illustrations of the passage of the tremors of sound through materials. When a building is warmed by hot water pipes, the sound of a blow on a pipe in one part of a building is carried through the whole system. It sounds almost as clearly as if it were made in the room in which we are listening. So too, the sounds of a ship are readily carried through the hull. In the Royal Institution, there is an arrangement for a special experiment in illustration of the point. A wooden rod, about 40 feet long, rests on the sounding board of a musical box in the basement. The rod passes upwards through two floors into the lecture room. In passing through each floor, it is kept from contact with the wood by a soft felt pad. Now, the tremors of the musical box pass along the rod, and if an ear is placed close enough to the top end of the rod, still better if any part of the head is pressed against it, the sound is easily heard. If a solid body, not too heavy, and having a large surface, is laid on the top of the rod, the sound fills the room. A tea tray or a violin serves very well. Even a hat will do. The fact is that when the tremors reach the top of the rod, they do not give enough motion to the air. The cross section of the rod is too small. Some bigger surface is wanted, which will move with the rod when pressed on it, and will give sufficient motion to the air so that all in the room can hear. We require, in fact, what is called a sounding board. We have the same effect when we use a tuning fork. If we hold it in the air after we've struck it, we hear only a feeble sound because the quivering prongs of the fork do not impart much motion to the air. Their surface is too small. So we plant the fork upon the table, and the sound then rings out strongly. The fork now shakes the table, and the table, with its large surface, puts far more disturbance into the air than the fork was able to do alone. There was a time when string telephones were popular as toys. One talked into a little box, the base of which was made of parchment. One end of the string was fastened to the middle point of the box, and the other end was fastened in the same way to the base of a similar box. It was necessary to keep the string tight. The sound tremors traveled along the string, shook the base of the receiving box, which shook the air, which shook the listening mechanism of the ear. Sound can be carried by water and other liquids as well as by solids. When two boats are close together, it is easy for those who are in one to hear blows on the hull of the other, the sound tremors being carried by the water. It's possible to send communications in this way. That sound can be carried by gases, such as the air, is, of course, our common experience. Sound cannot pass through a vacuum, however. It requires something material to carry it, solid, liquid, or gas. Between us and the sun, there is space, empty of gas or air or any substance. No sound can travel across such a space. Light, on the other hand, travels quite easily. Light and our eyes that see deal with the doings of the whole universe. Sound belongs to the world only. I may talk of the universe of light, but I can only talk of the world of sound. As soon as you understand that sound is a quivering motion which goes from one place to another, you will realize that most likely it takes a certain time to make the journey, and so it does. When, for example, a sound travels through the air, it takes nearly 5 seconds to go a mile. And it is a very important thing that all sorts of sounds, shrill whistles and deep boomings, take just the same amount of time to travel. If a band is playing a long way away, you hear all the instruments keeping time correctly with each other, piccolo and cornet and drum, no matter how far away they are. If some sounds traveled more quickly than others, you would only be able to hear music properly when you were quite close to it. It is a very common thing to find examples of the fact that sound takes time to travel. If you are standing on one side of a valley and you watch a train approach a station a mile or two away on the other side, you may notice when the steam first issues in a white cloud from the whistle as the engine driver gives warning that he's coming. And light travels so fast that you see the steam practically on the instant that the engine driver opens his whistle. But it may be many seconds before you hear it. I have often watched the woodcutters at work in Australia, where the clear, still air makes it easy to see and hear at long distances. From one side of a wide gully, I've seen the strokes of the axe fall noiselessly far away on the other side, and then, when the man has straightened himself and begun to move away, the noise of the blows has reached my ears. If you watch a long procession going along a street, marching to the music that heads it, every man puts his foot down at the beat of the drum, but of course the rear ranks do not hear it as soon as the front ranks, so that really they do not march in step. If you look sharply, you will see a ripple run along the line as the heads go up and down slightly to the movement of the feet. As the pulses go to greater and greater distances from their source, they spread over wider and wider surfaces and become weaker. The farther away the source of sound is from the listener, the feebler it seems to be. But if we wish to do so, we can prevent the sound from spreading itself over wide surfaces. If we prevent the sound from spreading, it will then carry much farther. As, for example, when we use speaking tubes, which carry the sound pulses with little loss for quite considerable distances. The walls of the tubes inside ought to be smooth, because if they are not, the rubbing of the air against the walls as it moves to and fro when the quivers pass over it spoils the true shape of the waves, turning them into little whirlpools in which the energy is wasted. Moreover, there must be no sharp corners, no right angles in the tubes, because at a corner some of the sound is reflected and goes back the way it came. When a man uses a speaking trumpet, he does something of this kind also, because the trumpet tends to direct the sound in the way the speaker wants it to go. But the action of the speaking trumpet depends more on the fact that the speaker can actually get a greater amount of sound out of his own throat. You feel that you're working harder when you are using one. The rigid walls of the trumpet do not allow the sound waves to spread sideways very readily, and in a sense hold them for the vocal organs to work on. The tremors of sound in the air spread away from the source in the way that waves spread in the sea, and they can turn a corner just as sea waves can. In fact, they are waves, waves in the air. But there is a limit to what they can do in this respect. Obstacles that are much wider than the waves are long, can hold up the sound waves and cast a sound shadow, just as there is a sheltered lee behind an island. But a small rock casts no appreciable shadow of the ocean swell. In the same way, Sound sweeps round and over small obstacles, so that we hear round a corner to a very useful extent. As we turn a corner from one street into another, we are aware that we've left many sounds behind us. They've been cut off by the corner buildings. This is especially true of high-pitched sounds, so that the dull roar of city traffic follows us down the side streets, even when we've lost the sharper sounds that make the characteristics of the various kinds of noises. And when, on a country walk, we come to the top of a hill, we can hear the brook that is running in the next valley, though formerly we've been in the sound shadow cast by the top of the hill. The shadow is often quite sharp because the pitch of the brook sound is high. To conclude, the answer to the question, what is sound, may be stated very simply. We want to learn as much as we can of what is going on in the material world round about us. Now, nothing can take place without starting tremors or quiverings, and in particular, quiverings in the air. Our ears are organs adapted for the detection and interpretation of the quivering. The quiverings are sound, and our detection of them is hearing. Sound in one form of wave motion. The waves on the surface of the sea are another. The analogy between them is so strong that the behavior of the water waves, which we can see, helps us to understand the laws of the sound waves which we hear but do not see.